Hello and welcome back to the PIN Podcast. We're on episode number 17, and I'm so excited and thankful for all of you that are listening. It means so much to me. And make sure that if you're listening in, to follow, subscribe. If you're on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or even on YouTube, if you want to see me and the beautiful guest today. And make sure if you want to ask any questions to the guest or look at get upcoming guests, make sure to follow us on Instagram at the PIN Podcast Official. And you could also text us at 1-833-4-A-PIN-UP. And today I am so humbled that we have a sponsor. We have Wax Poetic Clothing. And just like my podcast, where we talk about modern topics with a vintage flair, Wax Poetic Clothing does just that. They provide clothing that has a nostalgic look to them, but yet modern and comfortable, which is everything that we really need. It is handmade here in the U.S., veteran-owned, woman-owned, and what else do you need? She has a beautiful collection that is coming out for the spooky season. So make sure to check her out at the Wax Poetic Clothing on Instagram or on her website, waxpoeticclothing.com. Now, today I have a very special guest. Her name is Sarah. I knew.
That's fine. Yes.
I got it.
You did.
She's an antique jewelry dealer and a opera singer. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sorry for miss. I know I asked you for your name before.
No, you got it perfectly. Perfect. You nailed it.
So tell my listeners a little bit about you.
So I am a professional opera singer, and I have always been obsessed with vintage clothing, vintage jewelry. I think those things really go hand in hand with my opera profession, because so much of the training is, you know, really learning about like the glamorous art history of things. So, you know, the style, what different characters are wearing. We spend a lot of time learning about, you know, the history of the pieces. So like, you know, how did the premiere go over? And then you start thinking like, well, what were people wearing when this opera premiered? And like, what were they doing? And what was the scene like? So I think I've always loved like just that, that glamorous escapism of fine art of the past. And then also, one of the main things that got me into the performing arts was the costumes. I mean, you know, it's like the gorgeous, most amazing thing. It's so much fun. So when I was like 16, that's when I decided that I wanted to start studying opera and start training to be an opera singer. And it was also the same time that I just kind of started cultivating this obsession with antique and vintage fine jewelry. So it's been like a, you know, 15 plus year obsession. And 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I finally took the plunge and I was like, you know what? If I turn this obsession into a business, I can actually rescue all of these amazing pieces of, you know, antique and vintage
home.
Fine jewelry. Find them a good home, because, you know, I always wanted to buy everything that I saw and rescue it and keep it safe and keep it from being melted. But as a freelance opera singer, that wasn't in my budget. I couldn't just buy myself diamonds every day. But now I can. They're just not for me. So it's really been a dream.
And I have a question. Was there a specific piece of jewelry that you found that kickstarted it, like something that stood out?
Yeah. Well, my first piece of vintage jewelry was from my grandparents when I was 16. And I asked for like an old ring for my 16th birthday. And they got me this little Art Deco white gold box ring. And it had a little old European cut diamond in it. And that was the first time that I had heard the terminology. I took it to the jeweler and he was like, oh, this is, you know, an old European cut diamond. This ring was probably made like 1920s, 1930s. And I just got so excited. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I own something that like someone wore in the 1920s. How cool is that? And so that was the piece that like really kicked it off. I still have it. And yeah, I think I've always loved like antique shopping and going to estate sales. So I just kept seeing things that I was like, oh, if I could, like that's something that I would want to curate and rescue and rehome.
And now you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
it's
travel
amazing.
With the opera. So you're able to yes. see a lot more than just like the same thing around like me. I would just see things around South Florida, but you'll be able to see things everywhere.
I have to tell you, you're in the absolute best place for antique jewelry shopping. Oh. South Florida is like a hotbed of amazing pieces. So I always like make trips to go to Florida.
Have you ever been to the antique jewelry show that they have during Art Deco weekend here?
I haven't, but it's on my list, especially now that like we can't really travel. I have so many places that I'm like, oh, I want to go. Like I have a list of things I want to do.
There was some beauty. I went in January and there was so many beautiful, it was a lot of silver. I was surprised mm-hmm. to see a lot of silver, but there was also jewelry.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Like silver, like platters and stuff.
Platters, spoons, anything silver. Wow. And a lot of people that were leaving that I knew said that they left because there was a lot of silver.
Interesting.
That was my take from it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting to see like what different vendors focus on and like what everyone has a niche. And I think a lot of it is, you know, what are you finding? But then a lot of it is like, what is your style and what do you gravitate towards? And I think that for me, like, it's so personal. Like, I'm not like an old dude who like, you know, like just knows about jewelry and does this. Like, this is like my style and my passion and they're my babies. So I think it's, I don't know. It's interesting to see what people focus on.
And how, what would you consider estate? Like, okay, define the term estate jewelry.
Okay. So estate is anything pre-owned. So something could be modern and be estate. So estate is like the big umbrella and then vintage is 20 years or older. So technically something from the year 2000 is technically vintage. I, you know, in my mind, I would categorize it as like modern estate, you know, if I were listing it, but technically 20 years or older is vintage. And then antique is 100 years or older. So it's interesting because, like for example, the 1930s or like the late 1920s aren't yet antique, but like if something was made in 1920, then it's antique. And, you know, so
technicalities.
Technicalities, yes, but those are the things. So I do carry modern estate if it's something that like really speaks to me. If I see something and I'm like, this is beautiful, I would wear it, I know my clients will love it, then I will totally, you know, go for something that's you know, modern estate. But my real passion is like Edwardian through like the 60s.
And you also on your Instagram, you have a lot of Art Deco, I guess, to go with the Art Deco ring.
I love Art Deco. I love it. That was my first love. So yeah, that I definitely gravitate toward those pieces.
Yeah, like I love Halloween, but I always tend to gravitate. My wardrobe is always bright colored. Even my hair is yellow. So it's like you just gravitate to what you like in your past. That's why I find it funny that you said your story and then I put it together because I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's the really special thing about shopping vintage. There's so many amazing dealers out there. And I think you go to each one of them for a piece of their personal style or their taste. So, you know, I have clients who come to me for certain things and go to other sellers for other things. And it's so personal and it's like so unique to each person that if you're real and authentic to who you are and what your taste is, you know, people will gravitate toward that if they share your style.
What is like the most like crazy thing a client has asked to find?
Huh. I don't know that I have done anything crazy. There are a lot of vendors who specialize in Victorian mourning jewelry, which is fascinating. And to be honest, it's not my area. So I don't really carry it. Because there are other people who are so passionate about it and that's their thing. It's not really my look, but, the mourning jewelry often has hair art. So hair of a deceased family member or loved one would be like arranged in these beautiful curls or these braids and then put inside a locket and put inside a ring. So it's very romantic. Yeah, it's very romantic and like very sweet. But then if you really think about it, it's also kind of creepy.
Well, I used to be a mortician.
Yeah, so that I think is something like really specific, and there's a huge market for it. But it's not my thing specifically. If I found something amazing, I would go for it. But I'm sure people who specialize in mourning jewelry get a lot of really unique requests. I think my Yeah, there hasn't really been anything that's like crazy. However, I do sell a lot of divorce rings, which I guess is kind of unique. And it's something that I
explain the divorce ring. I saw it.
Yes. So I have been divorced, and when I got divorced, I missed wearing my ring. So I was also like in charge of my finances for the first time in my life, without having to like check with anyone or like, you know, I was my own woman for the first time ever. So I, found this amazing Edwardian dinner ring and I bought it and it was my divorce ring. And so I shared the story on my Instagram and now, it's a small sliver of my clientele, but it's a really cool and like meaningful process to be a part of, to like help other women celebrate their independence, celebrate themselves and buy divorce rings. So yeah, I guess that's different.
That is different, but that's amazing because it's like a personal level for you and, you know, and so many women can relate to that same feeling. I think that's great. And what is a dinner ring?
Okay, so a dinner ring is, it's like a cocktail ring. I brought all this jewelry with me to show you, but I didn't bring my ring. So let me show you.
I didn't know there was a dinner ring or cocktail ring or.
Okay, so
a poison ring, I've seen those.
Yes. So this is, how do the influencers do it? I can't do it. You just showed it. Okay, so this is like the shape of a dinner ring. This is also called a navette ring because it's shaped like a boat, a little boat. But it's long on the finger. This is 1930s. And mine is Edwardian. So it's like 1890s, 1910, like somewhere in there. But like that would be a dinner ring and like this would be a cocktail ring. Isn't that cool? So I brought lots of goodies to show, but the cool thing about the ring that I chose was that it wasn't like specifically engagement ring-ish. Like it could be an engagement ring if you want it to be, but it's a divorce ring. So like, it didn't feel like I was buying like a solitaire, although, you know, you could, but yeah, it was like, it was a really symbolic purchase for me. And it's just been so much fun to like help other women celebrate something that most of society gets weird around, yeah. You know?
That's true. Like the taboos are slowly coming out. Which,
yeah,
because it makes people feel more comfortable and talk and, you know, more exactly. Love all around.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, just like small soapbox for a second, but my first marriage was really emotionally abusive and I didn't trust my gut about things that were wrong. I just kept thinking like, I'm not going to quit at this. Like I've never been physically harmed. You know, I just told myself all sorts of excuses for staying because I felt like there was the societal pressure. And I think the more we talk about these things and the more we talk about like what a healthy relationship and an unhealthy relationship look like, and the more we destigmatize divorce, you know, I hope that more people will be able to get out of relationships that aren't good for them.
Yeah. Well said. I've only been in two relationships in my life, and I'm with the second one right now.
Yeah, you know what? I am too. So, I dated in between, but my husband now is like my second, like, you know, real relationship, and my second husband.
And he's an opera, no? Your husband?
Yes. Yeah, my husband is an opera singer, which is great because
did you guys meet in opera?
We did, yeah. We were like work buddies.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. We were work buddies for like a year before we started dating. So we had this great friendship. We respected each other as colleagues. It was a really like easy, nice transition. And now, you know, now that we're like stuck together all the time, that friendship is really important.
Yeah, it's really important because if not, you'll go crazy.
You go crazy, yeah. Yeah.
And I have a question about the jewelry. So,
yes.
Does he help you with the jewelry?
No. He's very supportive. And he like notices things. He gives like very informed compliments and he has like an interest in it. Because I have an interest in it. You know what I mean? Like, he's very supportive about it. Also, he is like totally open to wearing jewelry himself, which makes me really happy because I'm like always on the crusade to get men to like embrace wearing jewelry again. Men have always worn jewelry and then it just goes in and out of style for strange reasons. So like,
oh, see, that's something I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it just kind of goes like a wave, but men have worn jewelry for much longer than they haven't, if you know, yeah, if that makes that sense. Makes it's sense. Yeah, it's been in fashion for a lot of history. So I always have fun like buying cufflinks and buying little like lapel pins, and it's fun for me because it's your
passion.
It's my thing. But yeah, so he's supportive, but he's not like in the business. But he will be like, oh, that's new. And I'm always like, oh, it's for the store. And sometimes it's not for the store, it's for me. But you know, collection. Yes.
And how do you get, so when you find a piece of jewelry, What do you look for, or do you have like a, do you know what to look for, or do you look, do a preliminary, then like go get it appraised? Like, how does it work?
Yeah. So my inventory comes from a wide variety of places. So it could come from like an antique wholesaler, who has done a lot of the kind of vetting first. It could come from an estate or an antique store where they may or may not really know what they have. I'm generally not like digging through piles at a thrift store. That's a lot of work, with not a huge chance of finding anything good. So usually, the really, really good stuff comes from estate wholesalers and antique vendors and people within my professional network who have the good stuff. But a lot of gemstones go misidentified. So I buy something, I have a general idea of what it is, what the market value is, what I'm willing to spend. And then if it's something that I feel, you know, needs to be appraised, if it's something like really high value or something very unique, I will send it to my appraiser, who's a graduate gemologist, and he does a full dossier on it. But I do have a lot of training myself. So a lot of what I find, I know what it is. I have the tools at home to test and verify, to test gemstones, diamonds, metal content. And say, for example, like I'm at an antique mall. Like one of my favorite things is like, you know, on the highway, you see like antique mall, exit, whatever. Like,
yes, I love always, those.
You have to stop. Yes. Like, you never know what you're going to find. And there are all these little booths and like, maybe no one's been in there for 20 years. I mean, it's always so exciting. So say I'm at one of those and I'm like going through like a case of jewelry. I always bring a jeweler's loop, which is like that little magnifying thing that you hold to your eye so you can see it magnified. And I have one that has a built-in light because sometimes the lighting, usually the lighting in those antique malls is very dim. And my loop magnifies 45 times. Oh. So I am like, when I look at something, say I find a diamond ring, say it's an old European cut diamond, which is one of the old cuts that I look for, I'll check it out, see if there's any damage or any chips to the stone, see the condition it's in, and then make a decision on whether or not it's something that that I want to bring into the store. Then when I get it home, send it to the appraiser, do tests on my own, photograph it, research any hallmarks. So it's a lot. Yes. It's a lot of work to like really like figure out what you're dealing with, find the right things, you know, photograph them in a way that really captures like what they actually look like because you're shopping online. Yeah. So yeah, it's a labor of love, but it is a lot of work.
And it also must be satisfying when you find out if you find something, you know, the European cut, the stuff you're looking for. And
yes.
Or if you have an idea of what it is and then you get confirmation. That must be like, yeah.
It's really exciting. It's really exciting. So like diamonds for me are fairly easy. I know a lot about them. They're fairly easy for me to, you know, figure out and identify and classify and all of that. But like sapphires, for example, are really, really complicated. It's difficult with a tester to tell if it is lab created or natural because they have the same chemical makeup. It's tough to know if they've been heat treated or something. So I found this, this sapphire ring, and I just had a feeling about it. Like, I was like, I think this is really good. Like, I think this is like a really, really amazing natural sapphire, but you know, it was a risk. And then I took it to my, my appraiser, and he was like, this is a really, really good one. And I was like, ah! You know, it's so exciting.
Oh my gosh. And I have a question. The, it's escaping me now. Oh, but how do you feel about repro jewelry?
I'm fine with it. I think it depends on what it is about vintage jewelry that you're drawn to. So if it's just the look of it, I think repro is great. Like, there are some jewelers who do such an amazing job of doing reproduction pieces. They're using old cut diamonds. They're using like the techniques that a jeweler would use during that era. And the pieces are absolutely stunning. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I just kind of geek out on the fact that something is so old, and it's the only one of that piece that exists.
And it's lasted this long.
It's lasted this long. Yeah. So I think like that's something that really appeals to me. Like, I have a ring here, and it's like a really cute, like, diamond wide band. And inside it has the initials of the couple and their wedding date. Aww. Like, they got married on November 16th, 1952. And, like, I just think that's such a cool thing that, like, it's lived a life. It's been meaningful to people at like really important milestones in their life. And then you get to continue its story. And that for me is like really cool and meaningful. So it's more than just the look. It's like the story of the piece.
The continuation. Yeah. The sequel.
Exactly.
All right, and what's the oldest piece of jewelry that you've ever come across?
If
you could, or whichever one you think of.
Yeah, I have one right here that it's a little signet ring, and it's hallmarked, I think, 1866. Ooh. And the reason I know this is because it is British. And jewelry from England has very, very strict hallmarks. Like, everything has to pass through the assay office and get stamped. So there's a little stamp, and you can look up the clues, and it tells you where it was made, when it was made. So yeah. So often, you know, you don't have those like exact stamps. You're just kind of putting things together. But this ring, I know for sure, was made in 1866.
That's awesome.
So that's pretty cool.
That's a lot of sequels.
A lot of sequels.
But this is a good type of sequel. It's not like
yes, exactly.
Right. So you know the real deal.
Yes.
So what is the real deal when it comes to jewelry?
Okay. Expand on that.
Like, so let me see here. What I mean by this is, so what would be your three tips when looking for jewelry, antique jewelry?
Okay.
That's a better way of putting it.
Yes. Okay. So the first thing is read up on old cut diamonds, because that's a really, really big indicator that something that you have is vintage or antique. So the modern round brilliant is, you know, the modern round diamond that we have today. It has like predecessors before technology got to the point where cutters could create like the perfect, like scientifically perfect cut. So before the modern round brilliant, you have early modern round brilliant, you have transitional cut, old European cut, old mine cut, rose cuts, and they're the older you get, the more rustic the look is. They were cut to sparkle by candlelight or lamplight instead of electrical light. So they shine in a different way. And that's a big thing. Once you learn to identify those cuts, then that's a sure sign. It might be in a reproduction setting, but you know at least part of that ring is quite old. So learn how to identify your old cuts. Always travel with a loop. Keep it in your purse, keep it in your car, because you want to be able to get really close, see the condition of the piece, look for any hallmarks, any like metal stamps. And then that's the thing, know your hallmarks. You start knowing different maker's marks after a while. Like, I'll know that something is Traub, and then I know generally, you know, what era it belongs to. So I think the overarching thing is just start window shopping as much as possible. And the more you see, the more you kind of get that context, and you know what to look for, and you can say like, oh, I've seen that before. I know what that is.
Oh, these are great. I hope the ladies listening have this like on the background with their boyfriends, if they want them to propose to a nice ring.
Yes. Oh, and something really important too, if you want a vintage or antique ring as your engagement ring, it's really important to be very specific with your partner about that, because it's definitely not the first thing that people think of.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So you have to be like really specific about it. And I think generally when anyone's shopping for a gift for their significant other, it's nice to like have a hint, you know. It's nice to not have to shop blind.
But you're right. I would think, you know, now that I think about it, it's like if I'm buying something that's of large value, I would think new and big instead of old.
Exactly. And you know, where if you want vintage or antique, it's going to change where you look for that. So you're not going to go to me. but you know, generally you wouldn't go into Tiffany or, you know, into a major jewelry retailer. They won't have those kinds of things. So I think if I always tell people, if you have your heart set on, you know, vintage or antique, one, you could just tell your partner, just, you know, communicate right to them. But if you want, you know, a little more surprise, like tell your mom, tell your best friend, tell his best friend, like start a Pinterest page and like add everyone.
Start just, I've seen the memes that people are just talking to their cell phone. So that's they say that phones could hear you, and then all the ads start coming for eBay.
It's terrifying, but probably true.
It's true. I remember at my job, we were talking about some random thing. I forgot what it was, but it was so random that's nothing to do with me. It was to do with like my boss and a customer. And then next thing you know, I got an ad on my phone. I was like, is this a coincidence?
Yeah, no, it's so true. Oh, man. But use it to your advantage, you know.
Now I know where to get this item.
Exactly.
And then they could track you on what websites you go on, and then you go to another website and Google knows, like, okay, you were here, let's put ads. You might want to get this later.
Yeah, I know.
I've learned so much about jewelry. I would have never, you know, things I don't really think about. But
yeah.
Now I'm so intrigued when I go and I go to these antique malls. I'm going to just keep an eye. I got to get one of the.
Yeah, get a little loop. And then look. And I really like the ones with the lights. It makes a huge difference because those places are usually pretty dimly lit.
It's dim. They want it on purpose so you don't see that the stuff is really old. Like, I like to collect Lucite purses. So I like to look for like tags and stuff. So I have a little here, but. But that's what I get at the antique malls.
Yeah.
It's dark in there.
It's dark. I collect vintage postcards and old jewelry boxes, like the little ring boxes. If I allowed myself to, I could be a hoarder if I allowed myself to do that. So I only let myself collect three things, jewelry included. And they're all very small, so I can, like, keep them.
Like, now you have a museum. That's the next step.
Exactly.
There's somebody in California that she had a huge collection of vintage makeup, you know, compacts and lipstick and stuff. And now she has, like, a museum.
That's so cool. That's the dream.
Yeah.
That's, like, I want to do that.
Yeah, and I went to Vegas, and there was a special effects, Tom Sevlin. And he has like all his movie props in this like place, and it's called Museum. So you literally pay to see his collection. So that is a dream. There you go. Pay to see jewelry by Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be really fun. Or, I mean, I could collect all sorts of things if I had a museum.
There you go.
That's like.
First haul is going to be ring jewelry boxes.
Yeah.
It will be fun. All right. So do you have anything else you want to say about jewelry, or do you have something to show or anything else to show?
Oh, yeah. I do have something really cool to show. Okay. Yes. So I'm actually really gravitating toward 1940s jewelry these days. You know, I mean, I love it all, but I go through like different fixations. So this is called a tank ring. Let's see. Okay, so this is called a tank ring. It was made in the 1940s, and you know, World War II era jewelry was super military inspired. So these rings became really popular. They're shaped like tanks. They're inspired. Like, I mean, it's, and it could be, I mean, you could take someone out with this ring if you needed to.
Yeah, I didn't think 1940s had big rings, but look.
1940s was super, super bold. Like, really, you see a lot of 40s things that you think, oh, that looks super modern. And in fact, like 80s and 40s, like 80s borrowed a lot from the 40s, but these like big, bold, kind of like menswear inspired, jewelry pieces were really popular. And then, this is rose gold and white gold. And rose gold is like having a super moment right now.
Yes.
But you know, as you know, with vintage, like everything that's old comes back, you know? So like nothing is truly new. It's just like a reinvention of something old. So, rose gold is, it's gold alloyed with, you know, many different metals, but copper is the one that gives it that rose color. And during World War II, it was an easier to create alloy than yellow gold. So you see a lot of rose gold pieces because that
something else was, I wouldn't thought.
Yeah, it was easier to manufacture, and people would. They would bring in their old pieces and melt them down to create like modern, to create new pieces. So it's like, which is something people do today too. So, you know, again, everything just kind of goes in cycles.
What is one style of jewelry that you've seen that you would love to make a comeback?
Oh, well.
Besides okay. Men wearing jewelry.
Yes, because that is a big one. Like, guys, just wear your jewelry. Like, it's. But okay, what would I like to see come back? I guess for me, that's a tough question because I don't really go by like modern jewelry trends. You know, if there's something I like it. I'm looking at my collection now and I'm like, what? I mean, this is like my, you know, my store. Oh, okay. This is really fun. This is like 1960s. And I think like these big, bold enamel pieces, it's a snake. So it's gold and it has, green enamel over the gold. He has like a little face. It's
so
like,
cute.
It's so cute. And I think like just, and this was like such a style in the 60s. I remember my grandmother hated snakes, but she had a lot of this like blue and green enamel gold jewelry. And I think that this is like such a fun look. And I think that it would go with modern fashion. Like it's bold, it's unique, it's a conversation starter. I think like animal jewelry is something that should definitely come back. I said it first.
Yes. You heard it here first, guys. Animal yes. jewelry is going to come back. And if you need a wedding ring or any type of jewelry, you got to go to Sarah.
Yes.
And what is your Instagram and website? Because
yes, I am on Instagram all the time. And my handle is Songbird Sarah Jewelry. And Sarah has no H. So Songbird Sarah Jewelry, and then my website is songbirdsarahantiquejewelry.com.
Yeah, and I also have it in the description down below and on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. And great. Sarah, I want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank
you. It means a lot to me, and I learned a lot, and I even wrote down a couple of terms of jewelry cuts that I want to check out.
Yeah, and feel free to ask me questions, anyone, like, you know, send me a DM if there's something that, you know, you're like, I would love for you to talk more about this on your Instagram. This is something I'm interested in learning about. It's always nice to hear what people want to learn about.
Yeah, especially since you're so knowledgeable. It's amazing.
I love you.
What I've loved so far about doing this podcast, and I've just learned so much about people's different passions and how much they are, you know, you don't realize it until you speak to somebody one-on-one of how passionate they are about a subject. And it's, yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
And I love the vintage community. Like everyone has their niche and, yes, like that thing that they geek out about. So it's always cool to like tap those connections and be like, okay, this is your area, maybe not mine. Like, tell me what you know, like just unleash your learning on me.
And opera, I love Christian Dior. He was posting some dresses for, I don't know the opera name, but I just know the dresses were fabulous.
I have to look that up. And also like Versace, he designed, if you've seen the American Crime Story,
yes,
you know, but that is true that that Gianni Versace designed the costumes for Capriccio in San Francisco, and I think that's so cool. Like I actually was talking to a friend who did a production that was designed by Alaya, and he wouldn't come, it was in Europe, and he wouldn't come to do fittings at the opera house. Instead, all the singers had to fly to his showroom in Paris. Wow. And I was like, please me, like, can I have a gig like that? I want to go.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's not standard, and like, no. I don't personally have a story like that, but I know someone who did, so that's...
Just the possibility is there, you know? Yeah.
The possibility is there.
That counts for something.
Yes.
All right, thank you again, Sarah, and...
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you here, and I will see you all next Wednesday. I have another guest, and I hope you guys have a fabulous night.